The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this January 27th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz, and you got me for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. Hopefully, we're back to a normal week this week. Last week was crazy, right? You had the holiday on Monday. The snow moved in on Tuesday. Schools were out all week last week. So I'm sure a lot of you parents and grandparents out there were ready to see them go back to school and get out of the house, right? That's seems to be the feeling around the office of those who have kids here. So I'm sure a lot of you can relate to that, and I cannot, but I'm sure you do. And so, again, happy Monday. Hope you're doing well. Tons to talk about on the Monday edition of On the Line, as your Auburn Tigers and Bruce Pearl and the boys are unanimously the number one team in the country again. Yes, the second week in a row, unanimously the number one team in the nation. They take down Tennessee on Saturday in a instant classic, man. It was a crazy game, wild atmosphere. We're going to dive into all of that on the show today. Plus, we'll talk a little Auburn football junior day, kind of recap that as the Tigers pick up a commitment, not from that junior class, but someone who was a junior, reclassified, a very well-known name around these parts. And so we'll talk about that. Plus, a little bit of news in the Big Ten on two teams that I supposedly cheer a lot for, Ohio State, Penn State. They've got some drama going back and forth between Happy Valley and Columbus, so we'll talk a little bit about that. Plus, the Super Bowl is set. We'll recap SEC basketball and a whole lot more. And Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network will join us today as well. So a jam-packed Monday edition of On the Line. We'll open up the phone lines in just a little bit. We'll do that here shortly. But you can shoot us a text between now and then, 334-784-1067. That is the On the Line text box, 334-784-1067. Again, no, in case you were not here Friday, no Uncle T-Bone. His time here is done. He'll make appearances here and there, and he's still a part of our After the Game show over on Wings 94.3. He'll be back on Game Day on Wings this fall, the pregame show for Auburn football and various things that we do around the radio station. So you and I, and a new co-host that is a familiar name on the program, a familiar name on the station and around our family of radio stations at the Auburn Network. If you've been listening for quite some time, you can probably take a pretty good guess on who this guy is and somebody that's joining me as, my goodness, I can't keep up with how many different people we've had through here and had people depart for all different reasons and things like that, but excited for what is a new era here on this January 27th on a Monday afternoon. My new co-host here on the Line, 2 to 4, the voice of Lee Scott, Christian Griffin, my man. Good to see you. Happy Monday.
Folks, sitting around the office and just waiting for the doors to open, bringing the sleeping bag, and getting into people's ears enough to where you just bug them. They don't let you leave. It ends up working every now and again. Definitely worked here, Mr. Steve, Mr. Jacob. Definitely, we're just like, all right, fine. We're not getting rid of them. We might as well put them to work, put them to use, let him do something. Probably not too big of a surprise, right? With something that we've hinted at for long enough with the, he's here. I don't know what days, and so now you don't really have to think about any specific days, but no, really grateful.
I don't
grateful.
Have to think about it either.
Yeah, exactly.
Makes my life easier.
But no, extremely grateful for you, Jacob, for everybody here, just to be able to be a part of this. I remember the very first day that you had me on, and I made a whole Instagram post or a story about it talking about how cool it was. And so it's cool to be able to look back. That was right around a year and a half ago. And so now to be able to be at this point to where by no means do I think of it as casual, but to be able to be a part of it and not really think twice about it is really a blessing. It's a really cool experience to be able to put and to be able to live with everything that's going on, living in the world of Auburn athletics. We do it anyways off the radio, so why not have those same conversations every single day here with mics in front of us?
Well, it's a great time to be joining full-time, that is, of course, with all the positivity around Auburn basketball, around SEC basketball, spring practice for Auburn football right around the corner. And so looking forward to all that. Glad to have you along and looking forward to what the next era holds here during the show. Again, you can shoot us a text, 334-784-1067. That is the On the Line text box. And Christian, we now get to talk about, for the second week in a row, the number one team in all the land, the Auburn Tigers, who were voted again in today's AP poll. Everybody agrees, and especially after what happened Saturday night, Auburn is the number one team in the country.
62 votes decide the top team in the land, and all 62 said that the Auburn Tigers, playing in Neville Arena, get to deserve and keep the number one ranking next to their names. What a rockin' brick fight, you could say, happened at Neville Arena on Saturday night. 53-51. Auburn takes care of Tennessee. And again, it was a rockin' brick fight. Auburn had one more stone in the satchel that they were able to throw with Miles Kelly in the corner, the ultimate dagger. I mean, what a game, what an atmosphere that Neville Arena brought, the student section, the jungle brought, that College Game Day brought into Auburn. One of the louder crowd pops that I have heard, whether that be Auburn sports or sports in general, when Miles Kelly was able to knock down that three. What a game on Saturday night.
I think that inside of a building, of all the sporting events that I've been to in arenas or in domes or whatever the case may be, an enclosed place, right? The Miles Kelly three, I said it was top two on X over the weekend, and it very well not be may not be two. Yep. I mean, that it was unbelievable. A, the amount of people that were there on Saturday. That may be the most standing room I've ever seen. I will say there were empty seats. There were empty seats in that arena Saturday night. Just making that clear, Auburn fans, Auburn season ticket holders that decided it was too late, too cold, whatever the case may be, you were too lazy to go to the game, that's fine.
You said it before I did. I was counting groups of three, groups of four, groups
there
of
were.
Two.
I'm just telling you, there were. It may have officially been a sellout. I don't even know if it was. And I'm sure there were problems because people were selling tickets in those lower sections for over $1,000. I'm sure that had something to do with it, but good thing your greed got in the way, and glad you didn't sell that ticket or didn't go and got to see an empty seat. So that was cool.
It's okay. You got to sit on the couch and watch the game with the ticket in your back pocket. Yeah, so everything ended up being okay.
Yeah, I hope that ticket didn't sell, and I hope that you made $0 on it. And I wish Auburn would go after those people, but they won't. But anyway, other than the empty seats, standing room only on both floors?
Three deep.
Minimum. In the media sections where were, it was four and five deep. Most of them students, yes, but it was insane the whole way around. Media, of course, sits at the top now in multiple sections, and it was crazy. I mean, it was a zoo trying to get through and get to our media seats, and thankfully they had it, you know, roped off and stuff for us. But when Miles Kelly hit that three, that was the, I think it was the loudest, most painful pop I've ever heard. I mean, it truly probably broke something. Some sort of a barrier record. I mean, it physically hurt in the half second that it happened, and then everybody went absolutely crazy. Then you had the block on the other end. You had the throwdown. And even when the buzzer sounded, it took a second or two for everybody to truly accept the fact that Auburn had just won the game, because all of that happened in such a short amount of time, right after Ziegler misses the three and Auburn throws it down to the other end and the game is over. It took everybody a couple seconds to be like, oh my God, Auburn just won. Auburn pulled it off somehow, some way. Auburn pulled it off. It was ugly, 53-51, an incredible game. Incredible.
It absolutely was. I think everybody was expecting it to be a defensive battle like this. I don't think they were expecting these teams to shoot a combined, 48% from the floor combined.
Gross.
But everything that you could have asked for, again, I'll throw the crowd pop in there with the Devin Cambridge dunk against Kentucky on the fast break. That one right there, that's the only thing, that's the closest one that is comparable for a game that I was at, to where it was just the split second of it's about to happen, oh my gosh, it just happened.
Yeah.
Because it was louder when that three went in than what you were saying than the first second or two after the buzzer sounded at the end of the second half, because it took everybody a realization of, okay, we were down by 2 points 40 seconds ago. Almost have to look up at the score and make sure that the final score was what it ended up being. Such a smart play from Jani Broome. Again, getting the rebound at right around the free throw line, walked it up to the 3-point line after bobbling it, ended up recovering it and chucked it down to the other end of the floor, ultimately sealed the deal. And yeah, it took a little bit of time, but what other way would you want of Auburn to have won this game? A win like this, we talked about it on After the Game. This shows the versatility of this Auburn team. They can go out and win games 100-90 if they need to with one of the better offensive scoring teams in college basketball. And then there's a team like Tennessee that plays polar opposite of that, that wants to burn off 25 seconds every single possession. They want to run half-court sets. They want to throw you into fits, and they're going to take the points wherever they could get them. This was a game that, score-wise, Tennessee wanted to play. Auburn wanted this game to get into the mid-60s, lower 70s, where the winner wins 77-70, something like that. Tennessee wanted this game to get to the 40s, maybe the low 50s, and it's exactly what it did. The game went Tennessee's way, you feel like, a majority of the time, yet Auburn, the number one team in the country, still finds a way to win it.
Well, that's what stood out to me, was Auburn won the game that Tennessee wanted to play. I mean, this went, you're exactly right, you hit it perfectly. That's exactly how Tennessee wanted to play this game, especially on the road in Neville Arena, where, let's be real, the crowd didn't have a whole lot to get after. The crowd didn't have a whole lot to cheer for, because it was so sloppy, so many missed turnovers and missed shots, horrible officiating, horrible all the way around.
One more time.
Horrible officiating. Tennessee fans are completely convinced that Auburn is the next coming of the Kansas City Chiefs because we got help officiating. Just not true. But despite
Ziegler
all of
picked
that,
up his first foul in the final minute of the game.
Yeah, exactly. And Rick Barnes, just to go off on this tangent for a second, in the post-game press conference, Rick Barnes was asked about the final play where Tennessee was called for, or not the final play, but the one before that, was where Tennessee was called for the travel.
Yes.
He admitted it was a travel. He said, yeah, he traveled, but there should have been a foul. He thought there should have been a foul on Jani Broome because he had some hands on him. Maybe, maybe so. My problem with the officiating was the first half, they said, play on, boys. You got it. Well, whistle's in the pocket. You play your game. We're watching a top 10 matchup, two of the most physical teams in the sport. Go ahead, do what you want to do. And you know what? That's fine, especially in a game like this. I respect that. That's fantastic.
Yes.
But when we went to the locker room, it's like those guys got on the plane and took off, and they brought in a second crew. It was officiated completely different in the second half.
You could even go to the point in the first half of saying it was the first 28 seconds of the shot clock where you could get any physicality that you wanted. But as soon as you got a foot inside the three-point line or a foot inside the paint, and again, this goes on both sides of things, it was, okay, we're going to blow this whistle. And then, as you mentioned, in the second half, it was almost like, how can we insert ourselves into this game? ESPN, Auburn, they're only 4.5, 5-point favorites. We're going to do everything we can to make sure this gets under the 3-minute mark with timeouts. No team will get on a run. No team will have any flow whatsoever. And the water bottle spike is another thing that draws a little bit of confusion about. Out of all the times to blow a whistle, feels like that's a pretty solid one as well.
Yeah, but you start looking at the free throw numbers. Tennessee, 13 of 16. Auburn, 14 of 19. There's not that much of a difference.
No, and it's not. We talked about it, again, after the game on Saturday night, to where if you would have told me there were only 34 fouls called in the game, I wouldn't have believed you. You could have told me it was 34 fouls called on one team, and I would have believed you, just because of how many times you felt like the whistle got blown. And as you mentioned, especially in the second half, and especially as you work your way down the stretch of the game.
Regardless, though, Auburn wins 53-51. Jani Broome with an official double-double in his first game back. He had the second most minutes played on the team with 33, right behind Miles Kelly with 34, who ultimately hit the game-winning shot. The go-ahead game-winning shot is the one that Miles Kelly hit. Jani Broome, the official double-double. He had the Bruce Pearl triple-double. Which was hilarious that Bruce said that. He said that in the presser, and he paused just long enough for everybody, all of us to look around. I was like, wait, what? Because, I mean, I hold the stat sheet. They print it out for us. I was looking at it.
Trying
I was
to
like,
find the other
I was like,
double-digit number.
Wait a minute. No, he didn't. And he goes, yeah, had 16 points, 13 rebounds, and 12 missed shots. It's like, that's incredible. And that's how you know Bruce has the good relationship with his guys, when he can make jokes like that. And look, man. We talked about it all last week, if Jani Broome was going to play or not. I think inside that program, inside that locker room, Bruce says they didn't know, but I think they knew. I think they had a pretty good idea. I think Jani Broome had a pretty good idea. And then his quote Saturday night when someone asked him about the vandalization that was done to his car, he said, yeah, at that point, I was playing. There was no way I was going to miss this game.
No, and for those that haven't seen the video or anything, they wrote the UT logo and put it inside the windshield wipers.
Couple of sheets of paper with the UT logo.
And then burnt the Tennessee logo in the grass right in front of his car or whatever it may
be.
He
said they put a bunch of plastic forks in his yard. They forked his yard. Something we did back in middle school.
Right. And it's about how that whole thing went. But yeah, he posted on social media okay, this is what we're doing now. And after everybody saw that, you could even see some of the Tennessee accounts reposting the video saying, oh no, he's playing tonight. And how about Mr. Jani Broome? You're going for National Player of the Year. I mean, Sixth Man of the Year might be up for consideration as well.
And I was totally fine with him coming off the bench. We didn't really know what his role would be. But again, he had the second most minutes played on the team at 33, tied Chad Baker, and Miles had 34. So you could tell a couple of times where he was favoring that leg a little bit. Was a little bit slower, right? But no hate. It's just what you saw in the game. But he still did what he needed to do for Auburn to win this game. He had 16. Chaney Johnson came up big with 10 points and a couple of really physical finishes that he was able to get to go. 8 points from Tahad Pettiford on an off night for him in terms of shooting. Right, he was 0 for 4 from downtown. Auburn was just 3 of 20 from deep. I mean, this was one of the ugliest games we've seen from behind the arc this season for this Auburn team. We know Tennessee goes through their cold stretches, but, I mean, I had written down that Auburn did not hit their first three. Oh, when did I put it? Trying to see. I think Miles hit one with,
Jani Broome hit the first three of the game for
That's
Auburn.
Right.
And then Miles hit two in the second half.
That's
Those were
right.
the only three
That's
threes
right.
that Auburn made in that game.
Yeah, and Tennessee had, Tennessee had total three-pointers. They had 4 of 22, and they missed the all-important one, was Akai Ziegler at the end of the game in that short corner.
Jani Broome made it with 8:40 remaining in the first half.
That's so crazy. Oh, I was looking at the wrong game notes. That'll help. Yeah, Jani checked in at 17-19. Yep, hit that three. It was just an off night, man, which is so crazy because when that three goes up for Miles, I was thinking, and I'm sure a lot of Auburn fans were too, and I know we got to get to break, was for the first time maybe all year, I didn't have confidence in that shot to go down because of how the rest of the game had gone. We've all had confidence in Miles Kelly. He's the best shooter on the team. They told us that in the offseason. He's proven that all year long. But that was one of the few times this year that when they shot that ball off a broken play where Jani Broome almost turns it over, who made a heck of a pass, that was the first time where I was like, oh no. Because if that shot doesn't go in, Auburn loses the ball game. Loses the game right then and there.
That was arguably the most open shot that Auburn had all night as well. And it
That's
was off
fair.
Of
yeah.
a busted play, right? I mean, it's half the time when you're watching college football and a quarterback makes something out of nothing and all of a sudden throws it deep and you're like, okay, that ball's going to be in a triple coverage, and all of a sudden the receiver has nobody within 20 yards of him. That's kind of how this game felt on the hardwood, right? Jani Broome gets blocked, is able to keep his foot in bounds somehow, kick it to Miles Kelly in the corner, and everybody who was collapsing on Jani Broome, which again goes back to the fact of it's a National Player of the Year moment, right? That all five Tennessee Volunteers were standing at where they were guarding or supposed to be guarding the other player, had their full back turned towards the other player, and were watching Jahni Broome go to the rim. They were crashing the rim, collapsing the defense. And so for him to be able to have the wits about that, between that play and the final play at the end of the game where you chucked it the length of the floor, those are two of the smarter plays that you'll see anybody make in the year.
We'll talk more about this game and others when we come back. We're off and running here on the Monday edition of On the Line. Phone lines will open in just a little bit, but you can shoot us a text at 334-784-1067. We're back after this here on ESPN 1067.
This is Ian Fitzsimmons from ESPN Radio, and you're listening to On the Line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
We continue on here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We'll open up the phone lines in just a little bit, but you can keep shooting us your text messages in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067 as we are talking Auburn taking down Tennessee over the weekend. And so many, just so many highlights and so many ups and downs in a game like this where neither team could get going. Neither team had a rhythm. I think Jack mentioned on Saturday night during after the game, a run in this game was back-to-back buckets.
Yes.
Like, I mean, that was literally, you felt pretty good if you were up. Largest lead was six. That was it. That was the largest lead of the game was six. And, man, this was a rock fight. And the way that I know Auburn, I'm not going to say got away with one, but beat a really good team, and both teams were satisfied with how they played, was listening to Rick Barnes post-game. Because he was pretty upbeat. He was pretty positive. He didn't have a whole lot of negatives to say. And one of the Tennessee reporters asked him about it. They said, Coach, you seem... He literally used the word upbeat. He said, Coach, you seem a little bit more upbeat and positive after this loss compared to some of your previous ones. Is there any reason for that? And I think Rick Barnes said it well. He's like, look, we played really good and played a tough game. He said both teams are exhausted. And I think Bruce said that too. And he just said it came down to one shot. He said, we make that shot, we win. And we get one of the best wins of the year. And I think Auburn should look at that and listen to that and realize, like, that's a really good Tennessee team who did not play their best. And, of course, Auburn didn't either. But, my goodness, that's a great win Auburn just got.
It's a fantastic win. These are two of the best defensive teams based off of the ratings in the country. It's two of the better teams defensively in the SEC over the past half decade, it feels like. When you think of hard-nosed defense, it's Auburn and you think of Tennessee. So why would a game in reality not end up coming like this? That's why it's almost a crazy outlier when you think of the game last year in Knoxville. It was, what, 80-something to very, very high scoring. So this is, I think, a little bit more of what both coaches were expecting from this game. Coach Bruce Pearl talked about it. He said his challenge before the game for his players was that every one of them come back to the locker room after 40 minutes of being played, being absolutely exhausted. And I think every single one of them did. I think the players, shoot, it didn't even matter if you were playing in the game or not. I was exhausted from it. All of Tennessee players were exactly right. Going back to what Rick Barnes mentioned, where it came down to final shots, Auburn is 6-0 in conference play. Four of their wins have come down to a possession under 30 seconds, deciding a win or a loss. So coach talked about it, saying this team is 6-0, could very easily be 3-3 or 4-2. It just shows how good this league is. So when you take all of that into accountability and how well we've talked about this team playing and how dangerous they are, because you feel like they could possibly never lose because one guy is going to be there every single night to save the day, whether it's Denver Jones one night or it's Chad Baker-Mazzara one night or it's Miles Kelly one night. You feel like every single player that played in the game for Auburn had an off night, yet we talk about this game almost sounding a little bit more negative than positive, yet You're 6-0 in conference play, and you find another way to win.
And I thought it was really mature, too, of Bruce Pearl and the players, because we got a chance to speak with Janai Broome and Miles Kelly before BP came in, and they all referenced the fact that last year they won every game by double digits.
Yes.
Every game that they won by double digits a year ago. And you could tell that it finally hit them and set in, like, that as great as it was, and we hyped that up and we talked about it, we also address how concerning that could be, and we saw what happened because of that. And I do think that was a huge factor in the NCAA tournament.
For sure, yeah.
A huge factor. And so for those players and Bruce Pearl to all have that mindset of, look, we're fortunate, we're lucky, we're grinding out wins right now, it makes you a better basketball team. And Auburn's going to be better because of it. But I think a slip-up is still inevitable.
It very much is still inevitable. Jack, again, posed the question on Saturday night of, does a team like this and a game like this almost make everything a little bit better? And it's like, yes, because you're not getting those 25-point wins. You're having to play the entire length of the game, having to play all 40 minutes to try and scratch and claw your way to a W. You can still win, or you can still learn just as many valuable things off of a win than you can with a loss.
Auburn with 11 quad one wins. The next closest team has 8. Pretty impressive for what Bruce Pearl and Auburn's doing so far. We'll talk more about this later on. Auburn had junior day for football. We'll talk about that, plus some drama up in the Big Ten.
You are on the line with Jacob Goertz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Phone lines are open. Give us a call. What's on your mind? How are you feeling after what was a crazy weekend in college basketball, Auburn football, junior day as well, or anything else on your mind? 334-321-1390. Is the number to reach us, 334-321-1390, or you can always shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. Christian, Auburn football had their junior day this weekend, and they also, Auburn football, had their incoming players, we'll say. You can't even say incoming class because it's a combination of recruits and transfer portal guys. They were at the game on Saturday night, the basketball game. They were introduced at half court, but a really big and I think overall successful junior day for Hugh Freeze.
Very much so. I mean, a fantastic game, a genius event for Auburn to be able to put that around the weekend of Auburn basketball, right, rather than just making it to where, as important as it is to get all of these kids on campus, go ahead and get some of those personal introductions and get those relationships established, to be able to have another sporting event like this to where you can see the atmosphere of Auburn. You get your first true glimpse of what Auburn truly is about. Jaire Edwards, he's the number 3 safety in the nation. His quote was the one that stood out to me the most. He said, just being in the atmosphere of Auburn University is a great time. I suggest that any other recruits come to see what Auburn has to offer. And something like that is a really cool stepping stone, not only for Auburn athletics, but Auburn football especially, to where you're seeing everything happen and take place off the field, and you see the excitement that's still there and is building. The biggest hope right now is just that come August, you're able to finally see some of those results in the win column, because everything else is taking big time stepping stones. And again, you're getting the first big step that you have to get with this junior class. You're getting them on campus. You're letting them see glimpses and pieces of Auburn University. And I think they did a great job on Saturday night.
And we talked about it late last week. Anybody that was anybody was here this weekend. Over 7 different states were represented. You get all sorts of interaction and great communication with the coaches and seeing the facilities. They put on a whole presentation inside of Jordan-Hare. A lot of people saw that and heard that on the way into the arena. They had the light show going on and the video board playing. They did a whole thing there. And Auburn, while they didn't pick up any commitments from the true juniors in that class, and that's not really the expectation. That's not what junior day is really about. If you get one, great, but
it's not the expectation of Big Cat.
Correct. Right. Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. It's not Big Cat. This is, hey, let's get them all here for their very first time. Yes. This is not an official. This is nothing like that. Let's just get them here, and let's just really introduce everything for the very first time.
Get those kids their foot in the door. Allow them to experience the first little glimpse of what Auburn's about.
But Auburn does pick up a commitment.
Do you know him by?
I think so. I had to look him up. Okay. I did. I had to do some research and figure out who this kid was. Auburn did receive a commitment from a junior who reclassified and is now graduating early and will be officially on the plains this fall. He won't have to go very far. Omar Mapson Jr. will be an Auburn Tiger. He'll be an Auburn University Tiger and graduating as an Auburn High School Tiger. One of the best running backs to ever walk through Auburn High School is going to be playing for Hugh Freeze and this staff. And I can obviously tell you firsthand, he is truly special. Coach Etheridge has said nothing but great things about him. I have nothing but great things to say about him and his family. Just a 4.0 student, active in the community, a guy that you want on your team. He's easy to coach. He wants to be coached. And my goodness, when he steps on the football field, he's one of the best players when he's out there. He's big, he's fast, he's physical, he's got it all as a running back. He's rated as a 3-star. I think that's too low. I mean, he is truly special. And the fact that he could, I said it, he could go anywhere in the country. I think he was good enough to play anywhere in the country at the next level. And Auburn's single season rushing touchdown leader is now going to be at Auburn University. Making the quick trip, staying in town. He's going to be on the roster for Auburn next year.
He's one of those guys that you see so much potential with, right? You've seen it on the high school field. Everything translates to the college level. If Auburn were to let him walk and find a way to mess something up to where he goes somewhere else and becomes a big-time name, nobody would let anybody live that down, mm-hmm. right? Just because, I mean, if he chose to go wherever and lit things up, everybody would be sitting there going, how did you let this kid out of your legitimate backyard? And so, again, somebody that you've had the pleasure of calling, so many highlights, so many great moments with Omar Mapson. Excited to see him go from the royal and white to the orange and blue.
And you pair that with Alvin Henderson coming in, too. I mean, think about that running back duo.
Top in the state, would you? I mean,
yeah, I think easily. So. Yeah, I mean, Alvin Henderson's got all the crazy numbers playing. And I do not mean this in any disrespectful way. Playing lower classification football, they give it to him 50 times a game. He crushed every. I think he's the all-time leading rusher in Alabama football history now. Yes. In high school. And you pair that up with Omar Mapson, who I'm being told is even bigger than when the season ended. And if he had stayed his senior season at Auburn High School, he already broke records. He was going to shatter every all-time career record at Auburn High. Just came up a little bit short because he only played 3 high school seasons. So, the kid's incredible.
Omar Mapson, last year, again, as a junior, had 184 carries, had over 1,500 yards, averaged 8.2 a pop.
Yep.
Averaged 137.7 a game, had 8 games where he went over 100-plus rushing yards, and had 29 total touchdowns as well, and can do it through the air as well, a really good receiving back out of the backfield. So Auburn truly getting it all. I mean, he had averaged 15.4 yards per catch last year as well and had 3 touchdowns on that side. So you're getting somebody, when regardless of whatever argument you want to put, you get a guy that has 30 touchdowns in a single season. It feels like a guy that knows how to get the job done.
And I'm telling you, don't let his size fool you.
No.
This dude can move. He is so quick, and we saw it. Oh, goodness, what game was that? I can't remember. There was a game this past fall where he broke off a tackle, and he hit midfield and just turned it on another level. I had never seen him move that fast. I mean, he outran everybody. We're talking 7A Alabama high school football, and he outran them all. And it was incredible.
It's like the Cam LSU moment to where he gets to the 20-yard line and all of a sudden you just see something extra.
That's exactly what it was. And he just ran away. I think that's what was my call. It was like he runs away from the defense, and that's exactly what he did. So huge get for Auburn. Omar Mapson Jr. will be an Auburn Tiger. He'll be here in the summer. He'll finish up school this semester. He'll be on campus this coming summer. He'll be a part of the team this coming fall. And again, you pair that with Alvin Henderson coming in on top of what you've already got inside that room. I mean, Auburn's running back room just got better, yes, but it's quickly becoming, even with the loss of Jarquez Hunter, it's still becoming a top unit in the SEC.
And that's what you expect, right? I mean, you've had that for so many years to where you have that 1A guy, then you have the 1B and 2B, and then all of a sudden that one guy kind of makes his way, either graduates, works his way to the league that you've seen so many guys do that have carried the football for the Auburn Tigers over the past couple years. And that the guy that was 1B or 2B kind of steps into that main role, and you feel like things just continue to carry over. And so when you're able to get guys like this that you fully expect to take that jump at the college level, expect them to get some carries, get some playing time early, and then as they work their way through the sophomore, junior year, it can be some of those go-to guys, those dynamic guys that Auburn's had for such a long time. A really great feeling when you see so much depth and so much talent in the backfield.
Listen to the names that Auburn's going to have in the room. Damari Alston, who most people assume is going to be RB1, is your starting running back. You still have Jeremiah Cobb as he comes back as a junior. You bring back Fat Burnett. You have Justin Jones, a senior, in there. You bring in Alvin Henderson as the freshman. You bring in now Omar Mapson Jr. as the freshman. And you bring in Darrell Robinson, the UConn transfer running back, who was a starter there and was a really good contributor there. And so you bring in Darrell Robinson from the transfer portal. I mean, you've got three or four starting caliber running backs in that room. I mean, you take Alvin Henderson or Omar Mapson, could they start right away at the SEC? No, probably not. But I think group of five somewhere, yeah, absolutely. They would be thrilled to have guys like that. Or Darrell Robinson, who had other SEC offers coming out of UConn. They're all coming in as newcomers behind Damari Alston and Jeremiah Cobb.
Again, it's all that you can ask for, continuing to fill pieces that you don't just feel like are filling roster spots or filling depth. You're getting guys that you fully expect to make a legitimate contribution, whether that be freshman year, sophomore, or as they continue to grow in college. But by no means does Auburn feel like they're at the point of desperation of we got to get somebody just to fill another spot on a depth chart.
Really looking forward. I can't express enough how happy I am for Omar and his family and ones that I've gotten to know. And the fact that Auburn is getting him, again, staying in town, and one of the best players in the state of Alabama staying home for Hugh Freeze and Auburn. And you said it too. This was not just about getting a big-name player and not letting him go somewhere. It was about him not leaving your backyard. I mean, you pair that up with Omar and Alvin as two of the best running backs in the state. I just think that can't be overlooked or overstated how important that is for Hugh Freeze and this staff if they survive, right? That's the big thing, and I hate to say it that way, but it's true on the future of Auburn football. Again, Omar Mapson will be here this coming summer, and he'll be a part of the roster for fall of 2025. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up hour number one. Do want to talk about the situation between Ohio State and Penn State, two teams that I know very well. We'll talk about those two teams and what's going on in Columbus and Happy Valley as we wrap up hour number one after this.
War Eagle, this is Coach Bruce Pearl, and you're on the line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. This is the Monday edition of On the Line. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. You can give us a call, 334-321-1390. That's the phone line number. You can also shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. Several congratulatory texts for you, Christian, becoming full-time co-host on the show. So just wanted to share those with you. Several of those have come through in the last 48 minutes that we've been live. So just wanted to pass those along to you. And did want to bring this up, and we've teased it a little bit, because it's interesting, and it just kind of shows the state of college football that we're in, where Ohio State's national championship-winning defensive coordinator, Jim Knowles, who's been there for several years and has turned them into one of the better defenses in college football. It's crazy what happens when you pay for it. He has since left Columbus and made a deal to be the defensive coordinator, same position, in Happy Valley, where he is now the DC at Penn State. He is going to be on a three-year deal that'll average $3.1 million per season, is what ESPN is reporting. Makes him the highest-paid defensive coordinator in college football. So, not moving up to the pros, not moving up to a bigger program, CG, a lateral, if not step back.
That's what I was
going
to say.
From where he was to where he's going now. There is some background. He's a Pennsylvania kid. His dad was a Philly cop, I believe. He's a Pennsylvania guy. He's got family over there. So he is moving closer to home, and I totally understand that. But from a career perspective, it is a little head-scratching to me. You just won a national championship with Ohio State. You were making pretty good money in the Buckeye State, and you leave to go to a team in your conference, to one of the biggest rivals, but you are now the highest paid coordinator in college football.
And
defensive coordinator, sorry.
For anybody that's wondering, they didn't play each other this past year, but I guarantee November 1st, 2025 at Ohio Stadium in Columbus, Ohio, where Ohio State hosts Penn State, that will be a very, very interesting game. Maybe James Franklin just knew that he couldn't get it done himself anymore, had to go get some experience on how to actually win a national championship. Had to go get a coach that knew how to do it.
I guess so. It's so crazy when I saw the news that Penn State was making that deal, because, I mean, it's a great hire. Again, he was making, I think he was making 2.2 at Ohio State, so he got almost $1 million a year raise. And look, $3 million for a defensive coordinator, that's a lot of money, man. I remember the days, and I'm young. I remember the days when DCs were making $500K, $250K. I mean, you weren't even sniffing $1 million as a coordinator in college football decades ago, right? And now you've got DCs, and especially OCs, at high level programs. Heck, they're making more money than head coaches at Power 5 schools. But if you're good, you're good. Totally get it. Now, here's where it starts to get interesting. Right? Because Knowles took that job in replace of Tom Allen, who took the DC job at Clemson, which was a little odd to me as well. Tom Allen, the former Indiana coach, then goes to be the DC at Penn State. He then makes a, I would say, lateral move to Clemson at this point to be the defensive coordinator.
Sure.
And then Jim Knowles was taken from Ohio State to Penn State. Listen to this. According to Bleacher Report, and according to Brett McMurphy of the Action Network, longtime college football reporter, this is where a lot of people have seen some real frustrations. Listen to this. It says, quote, Ohio State, according to the article on Bleacher Report, Ohio State asked defensive coordinator Jim Knowles to skip the team's college football playoff national championship celebration while he considered a move before joining Penn State. Again, Ohio State, when they learned, after they won the national championship, when they learned that he was interested in interviewing for the Penn State job, Ryan Day told him not to attend their championship parade. I understand. I know where that's coming from, but that just rubs me the wrong way.
Yes.
That rubs me the wrong way. That's not okay to me. That's not cool for Ryan Day to do that.
It hits the part that we've talked about with how it feels like players are at a loss, but because of the calendar and the transfer portal, to where guys like, or guys, say the guys that play on Arizona State, right, that didn't necessarily contribute the way that they were hoping and wanted to go enter the transfer portal, you know, you've had some of those coaches say, go ahead and go. You're not going to make the trip with us to go play in the college football playoff, rather than there's other coaches that, like Dillingham, that said, no, you're more than happy to stay. You're going to be a part of everything still until we find you a new home. I feel like this is somewhat of a comparable situation, because it's like, this guy just won the national championship with you, first one for Ohio State since 2014, the year that you felt like you had to get it done if you were Ryan Day. And before anything was even accepted, it was, he heard that there was a talk of him rumbling with Penn State and asked him not to attend the parade. They eventually said that he was reoffered by Ohio State, but it was, quote, well below the competition. And so then he decided to go and make his way to Happy Valley.
Ohio State was the number one overall defense this past season in college football. They finished first in total defense and in scoring defense at just 12.9 points per game, according to ESPN. Goes on to say the Buckeyes ranked second in sacks, passing touchdowns allowed per game, and opponent red zone scoring percentage, second in the nation, and were the third ranked run defense and in passing yards allowed. I mean, they were legitimately, by the numbers, the best defense in college football, and it by far helped them win a national championship. Yes, did Will Howard and Jeremiah Smith and all those guys, did them dropping 45 points a game help? Yeah, you better believe it. But that defense showed up to play. They were the most physical. They were the fastest. They were the best team in the college football playoff. And not allowing him to be a part of your parade and your championship celebration, all because he took what he felt was a better job for him in his home state, making more money than you were willing to pay him? Give me a break,
Ryan
Day.
That's the other thing.
Give me a break.
He was then re-offered the position for less money. So... I don't understand. I mean, if the one Ohio State big time game that you watched, or if you didn't watch the Michigan game, obviously you saw that it was very low scoring. You saw how well they played. Look at the adjustments that Ohio State team made after the first drive that Notre Dame put on them, where Riley Leonard went what felt like 30 minutes and walked down and punched you in the mouth, took a 7-0 lead. You were sitting there going, oh, man, I don't know if Ohio State can recover from this. If Notre Dame can do this all night long, you better watch out. Instead, what happened the next time? You force three straight three and outs, you score three straight touchdowns, and you're up by two touchdowns as you walk your way into halftime, and Ohio State ultimately ends up being your national champions.
And I know Penn State's happy about the hire, and it's a great hire. Again, Jim Knowles is one of the best DCs in college football, but, man, defense hasn't been the problem in Happy Valley. They can't score. Their offense sucks. So... congratulations, your DC's still going to be really good. He can't help you offensively.
Good thing you have the same quarterback, though.
And the same head coach. God, how dare we think about firing James Franco? What a crazy idea that would be. You know what else is crazy? We're getting into hour number two. We'll have that for you coming up next here on ESPN 106.7. Stick around.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7. Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. If you missed any of hour number one, we'll have the show posted for you. All the audio will be put on our station website. You can find that at ESPNAU.com. Redirects to a couple of those podcasting platforms as well, but best way to guarantee you find it is to go to our website at ESPNAU.com. You can also listen to the show live there every single day or using our Radio Alabama app. So you got three ways to listen to the show. There's no reason for you not to be here every single day. And if hour number one, if you missed it, we talked a lot of Auburn basketball against Tennessee as the Tigers remain undefeated in conference play, remain with just the one loss on the season. And they also remain as the unanimous number one team in the country. We also talked a little Junior Day recap for Auburn football as they pick up a commitment from Omar Mapson Jr., the Auburn High School standout who will be on campus this summer and a part of the 2025 roster. And drama happening in Columbus with Ryan Day and Ohio State. Just another reason for some of us in this room to dislike him. And so all of that was in hour number one. If you missed it, again, you can catch up with the podcast later on today at ESPNAU.com. Here in hour number two, going to dive more into Auburn, Tennessee, plus other big results from around SEC and college basketball this weekend. And then Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network will join us coming up in just a little bit. Before we get into content, though, I want to remind you that hour number two, each and every day during On the Line here on ESPN 106.7, is brought to you by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. 334-321-1390, that's the phone line number to get you through to us. What's on your mind? What are your takeaways from Auburn beating Tennessee this weekend or other games around the SEC? And that's where we begin now. Christian Griffin joining me. In case you missed our announcement in hour number one, he is our new full-time co-host on the show, so happy to have him along for the hopefully forever future here on the show. And if I ever go anywhere, you got him at least. At least there is a backup. Yay. Now. At least there's somebody to back me up in case something happens to me. And so glad that you're with us and looking forward to having you, like I said, for a very, very long time. And you start looking around the SEC, right, from what happened this weekend in college basketball. Auburn, of course, gets the highlight win, 53-51. It's the biggest win of the year, I think, in college basketball. Other than Duke beating Auburn inside of Cameron Indoor, I think this is probably the biggest win of the season in college basketball. But some great games around the Southeastern Conference as well. And I know we're going to get to a phone call in just a second. But looking at what happened in the Southeastern Conference, Christian, is there a game, a result, other than Auburn-Tennessee, that stood out to you? It could be Alabama struggling against LSU. It could be Florida dominating, manhandling Georgia Saturday afternoon. Vanderbilt upsetting Kentucky. Texas getting the win over A&M. Somebody called that.
We both did.
That's right. Uncle T-Bone did. But that's okay. We called that. Somebody else said South Carolina was going to be Mississippi State. What a dumb take that was. Missouri and Ole Miss or Oklahoma and Arkansas. Biggest game, biggest takeaway, biggest result to you other than Auburn, Tennessee.
Gosh, I mean, you feel like there's quite literally, you could say, a different storyline for every single game. The one that stands out to me, and you don't even want to say stands out because at this point, it's not even comical. You almost feel bad. It's South Carolina. They're sitting at 10-10, 0-7 in conference play as they fall yet again at home to 14th-ranked Mississippi State in overtime. They fall 65-60, just as Bruce Pearl was talking about how this Auburn team in reality could be 2-4 or 3-3 in conference play. What a crazy different universe that we could possibly live in if South Carolina was 4-3 or 5-2 in conference play.
You said sad and just disappointing. I thought you were going with Arkansas, who lost again this weekend, Christian. Again, they're 1-6 in SEC play.
And they did it at home as well.
They let Oklahoma come in and get their second win of the year in conference play in Fayetteville. Like, oh, I think Arkansas, and we got to get my buddy Ty on here. He does ESPN Arkansas. We got to get him on here to talk about the Razorbacks. And are they already done? Are they already checked out on Calipari? I mean, what a disaster this has been in Fayetteville so far. They lose 65-62 on their home floor to a Sooners team that's 2-4 in the league. Like, they're not good.
To a team that shot 41%.
Oh.
On the road, and that's enough to get you a win if you're Oklahoma.
More games to talk about coming up in just a few minutes. Let's get to the phone lines, though. 334-321-1390. We begin with Dak. You're on the line, my man. What's up? How are you?
Before I start talking about basketball, what's your take on the Bills and the Chiefs game last night, man?
Oh boy.
I think a lot of bad coaching, and I usually don't like to talk about the coaches too much, but guys, I'm so tired of seeing, and you see it all the time, more and more. Why do coaches go for two when they don't have to?
Right, right.
Point hunting
early. Yeah, and it happened in the Commanders Eagles game too. Dak, they were going for two in the first quarter.
It doesn't make sense just because you follow this card that you've seen everybody write down and do. You do not need to go for two until the last 4 minutes of the game.
Yes.
And as soon as Buffalo did that in the second quarter, I said they're going to get beat and it's going to come back to haunt them. And then they did it again in the third quarter, and it did.
Yeah,
that
they
was
did.
The difference in the game.
I didn't disagree with the one near the end of the third quarter. I thought with how the game was flowing, I felt that that one was a little bit more necessary. But two-point conversions in the first half, you're asking for trouble. I mean, you're messing with the football gods. You're asking them to strike down on you and to come back and bite you later.
Look, even you know, we've done it here, but this is what you're saying. This is what Buffalo's coach was saying at that point in the second quarter, that our defense is not going to allow another point for Kansas City to score. That's what you're saying, which is ridiculous.
It's the same thing with after they had the third down sack or whatever, and it came fourth and 11 or whatever it may be, and the announcers were going, you know, do you possibly punt here and trust your defense? Like, no, you're going to go for the game because you're not going to give the ball to Patrick Mahomes and say, okay, we trust That's our right. defense for four plays that the best quarterback in the NFL is not going to find a way to make us pay, right? You mentioned the card, right? It feels like there's something with head coaches and the way the scoreboard has to look, where 14 for some reason
right.
looks so much prettier than 13 because of two field goals and a touchdown. You have to get
That's
back
right.
to 14 because if they score 21, then oh no, we're going to be down by 8 instead of 7. And it's, for some reason, things just aren't going to look pretty.
That's right. They treat it like a Bible, man. And if this is what it's saying, then we have to do it. It's ridiculous, man. And I'm going to tell you, I go back all the way to when Bowden was coaching at Auburn. And ever since this happened, I have always kept up with it when teams do this. I don't know if y'all remember this, but when you remember our two undefeated, you know, Bowden went undefeated those two seasons until, you know, we tied Georgia, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the next year when Florida came back to Auburn and they jumped out on us big early, and it was like 24-0, I think, in the first quarter. And so here we go. We start moving the football at will and we're scoring. And every time Bowden went for two, we finished, I can't remember if it was 0-5 or 0-4 on our two-point conversion.
Didn't get one,
but
though.
Yeah, but guess what? How the score ended at the end of the game.
You lose by two or you lose by three, right? Where if you would have kicked the extra point every time, you win.
That's right. We lost by four. I think it was 42-38. But if he kicked those extra points every time, you see where we would be. And ever since then, I've always made sure I keep up with that stuff. But yeah, I mean, too many coaches go by this card, and I'm sick and tired of seeing that all the time.
They overthink it, Dak, and we talk about that so much. It seems like Hugh Freeze and this Auburn staff fell into that trap. They overthink
they
it. They overcomplicate it, and you, of all people, get that. I mean, you don't have to outsmart the game. You don't even have to outsmart the other team.
It's
man.
Like you're almost trying to predict the adjustments that
That's
the other
right.
coaches are going to make rather than actually letting the game fall into place.
Right, and the thing that I don't get is, and even with Hugh Freeze, you're saying that you're going to keep them out of the end zone the rest of the game,
right.
which is ridiculous. I don't get that.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And those two games last night had some very questionable coaching decisions. Yes, there were questionable officiating calls as well, but yeah, shocker, Philadelphia and Kansas City in the Super Bowl.
Well, this is the difference in the coaching last night. Now, think about this. When Buffalo had a 4th-and-1, right, it took them 25 seconds to get a play in.
Yes.
And even though they were going to go with a quarterback lead, basically, but the difference was, did you see how Kansas City operated when it was 4th-and-1?
Boom. Go, 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 go.
That's right. He knew exactly what he was going to run. He got them outflanked. He put the two tight ends in a trip situation in bunch, and he ran the quarterback sweep, and he had a guy over there that he could toss it to in case they did have a guy there to stop it. Without any question, they knew what play they were going to run.
Yep.
That's the difference right there.
That's why coaching. They're going for three-peat right now, Dak. They're going for three in a row.
That's right, guys. And my last little question here is basketball.
Okay.
So did y'all see what I couldn't bring it up because I was at school, so I couldn't bring it up. But what's the deal with Sears, and didn't his mother go off on the coaches today?
There's a lot to talk about that with the Mark Sears situation. I'm glad you bring it up because we haven't had a chance to talk about that just yet.
Okay.
It was, but we'll talk about it because I do have thoughts on that.
All right, guys. Thank y'all.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it, Dak. 334-321-1390. Glad he brings that up. We'll talk more Super Bowl stuff in a little bit in the championship games here in just a second, next segment, before we get to Jacob Hillman. But I do want to get to that, because that brings us back to the great points by Dak on the coaching conversation, by the way.
They're fantastic. I mean, it's exactly...
You don't have to... They want to flex their brain so much. They want to show that they're just smarter than everybody else.
You will not challenge the decision making. And how dare you, if you ask me in the post game presser why I did it?
Play the damn game. Like, if you do that, you're gonna win more times than not. And even in the professional level, let them make mistakes and just execute the game plan. Execute it the way you're supposed to do it. And you're going to win more times than not.
How many times do you think, and I know we're going to get to the other point real fast, but how many times do you think, because I've seen it plenty of times, where you see a team go for two after they score, whatever it may be, if it's early third quarter, early fourth quarter, where you don't feel like it's necessary, all of a sudden they get the ball back late in the game, and it's a four-point game instead of a three-point game. And now you have to score a touchdown. You have to go all 75 yards of the field rather than going 50 and trying to tie it up and go into overtime. I feel like it happens way more than it should, and it makes it to where you feel like the simple answer, again, instead of point hunting, play the game the way that it's supposed to be played. The score doesn't have to be perfect and pretty every single time, to where if you score four touchdowns, it's 28-28.
In terms of what Dak was talking about with the Mark Sears and Alabama situation. Crazy story that developed over the weekend. While Auburn was playing against Tennessee, Alabama was in an absolute battle with LSU in Tuscaloosa, mind you, where you look up after the first 20 minutes, and this thing was tied. This was 40-all in Tuscaloosa inside of Coleman Airplane Hangar, and then Alabama pulls away, right? They win 80-73. That's an LSU team, reminder, that's 1-5 in conference play. They have one win in conference play so far.
Alabama was 17.5-point favorites in it.
And they had to fight for 40 minutes to get this win. But it's crazy, because that's not even the biggest story, the fact that LSU kept it close. It's the fact that LSU kept it close, and Mark Sears only played 17 minutes, didn't see the floor, Christian Griffin, in the second half.
Went 0-for-5 in the first half. Not 0-of-15, not 1-for-18, and had 9 turnovers. 0-for-5.
That's it.
Look at the Auburn game. Denver Jones went 0-for-8. Still played 30-plus minutes of the game, because you trust him as your go-to guy, right? That's somebody that you trust that is a valuable spot on your roster. This is the SEC Player of the Year last year, and competing for it again this year. This is a guy who decided to throw his name in the draft waters and end up coming back for another year, and ends up playing, as you said, 17?
Mm-hmm.
17 minutes, didn't sniff the floor in the second half. You can see him in a video talking with one of the assistant coaches as they're early in the third quarter, just about the frustration, everything. You could see that he's almost in tears because he's so frustrated.
He was wiping them away.
He's trying to understand everything that's going on. And then social media plays a factor as well, to
Shocker.
Where Mark Sears' mother, where if you watch an Alabama game, you see her about 20 times, because that's how many times Mark Sears goes to the free throw line.
Who gets more TV time, Mark Sears' mom or Taylor Swift in a Chiefs game?
Oh my gosh. That would be a really good study. Those are the answers that really need to be.
Yeah, who's got the time to do it? Who's going to put themselves through the misery of watching that much Kansas City football and that much Alabama basketball? Not me.
I'm definitely not doing it. But again, she went on to social media and was talking about everything, responding to a bunch of parents or fans that were talking about his game. And I think the biggest thing that you look at, her biggest response was, Mark was not off. His shots just didn't fall. Yes, he'll bounce back. He was getting assists and he was making defensive plays. He just didn't have the chance to perform. Thank you. And that's kind of in the midst of all of these responses that she's giving. And
she had a big post today. Did you see this?
I have not seen the new one.
She has another one. She posted today, and it says, so let me address the misinterpretation of what's being said to the media. She had a whole, I mean, this thing is paragraphs long. Not going to read it. all, but just
eight said, ball pool.
She said, yeah, as a mother, while I may not agree with the decision, I recognize and respect Coach Oates and the entire Alabama coaching staff. I did not agree with the choice to keep Mark on the bench for the entire second half, but I fully understand that in sports, especially at this level, these moments happen and we all learn and grow from them. Mark didn't perform poorly. Sometimes, as you said, shots just didn't fall. So that's the quote from that, right? This was from earlier today, because that is in response to what Nate Oates said in the post game.
Yes.
This was a shocker to me. We have never heard Nate Oates talk about Mark Sears this way, where he says, quote, I'm going to play the players, put in the players that give us the best chance to win.
Yeah. He said, we went with the guys in the second half that I thought gave us the best chance to win this game.
Which is crazy.
And a guy that plays 38 minutes a game for your squad had a subpar first half. You just decide to, like, I'm all for coaches teaching through example and things like that, but like, what does Mark Sears take from this? Oh, I need to practice harder so that way my left elbow jumper goes in instead of missing, so that way I stay on the floor.
For a guy that's averaging 20 points a game in SEC play.
How many times have you seen guys have quiet first halves and they come out and score 18 in the second half? Mark Sears is a guy that can do that on a nightly basis.
This is only the second game all year he was held scoreless. The only other one was their win against Illinois in the in whatever classic or event that they played in. In that game, he only played 21 minutes. Huh, he was 0 for 5 from the floor, and he was scoreless. That's the only other time. Two games all year.
So there's your magic numbers. You better score in the first half, or you better only shoot less than 5 shots.
It just seems like there's more to this situation, does it not?
Yes.
It just seems like there had to be. Because for a guy like Mark Sears, who has played so much college basketball, you trust him to figure it out. And there's no shot you look at this and you say, we're going to lose with him on the floor.
Right. He's almost like a Zakai Ziegler type of point guard, right? To where you feel like the moment is never too big. He seems to make the right moves at every single time just because he's so experienced. He's played so many minutes and so many years of college basketball to where, yeah, whether there's something under the table or there's something underlying, there's much more to this story. I think if Uncle T-Bone were here, he'd say it doesn't pass the sniff test or the smell test.
Yeah, which I'm getting text about it possibly being defensive related, which fine, right? If Mark Sears is not putting in the effort, running down the floor and defensively, and again, I didn't get a chance to watch the game because I was at Neville Arena watching a top 10 matchup between Auburn and Tennessee. But if that is the case, then okay. But then you've got a bigger concern in a close game on your home floor on a Saturday night, and your leader, your go-to player, isn't hustling on defense.
The player that decided not to go play in the NFL or the NBA this year
because he wanted to be back in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah.
Like, that's a big problem for Alabama and Nate Oates. And maybe the sitting him in the second half, and maybe he did just have a bad night. Or maybe there's something bigger in Tuscaloosa. You just never know. And what's crazy is while Alabama was dealing with that sort of situation, Auburn had one of their own. Maybe not with a guy as impactful as Mark Sears, but definitely raising some eyebrows and question marks here on the Plains. We'll talk about that when we come back. We're off and running here in hour number two. Give us a call, 334-321-1390.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Similar situations in Auburn and Tuscaloosa seems to happen more than you would think, right? And the Mark Sears situation came up, and there's so many different thoughts and opinions and rumors about whether there was lack of defense from Mark Sears, poor offense, poor attitude, altercations between him and Nate Oates. Who knows, right? I guess we'll probably find out more as the week goes on. But while that was happening in Tuscaloosa, Auburn had one of their own, it seemed like, with the very talented, very young, very raw freshman of Jakai Howard for Auburn, who has had limited time this year, has seen some time on the floor, and has had explosive moments at times on the floor. But here recently seems to have a little disagreement with his playing time, CG. And in this game on Saturday, top 10 matchup in your home building, one of the biggest games to ever happen inside that place, Seemed like Jakai Howard didn't get as much playing time as he wanted to. And something happened where he touched the floor once in the second half, very, very briefly, and it was reported, and some people saw it. I'll admit I did not. I was looking away, but it's been tweeted out, reported several times. Him and Bruce Pearl had a discussion. Did Jakai Howard? Bruce Pearl pointed to the locker room, and Jakai Howard never came back.
Yeah, there was a little bit of frustration you could see in the first half. And when they returned from the halftime break just to have the shoot around with 4 or 5 minutes left, all of the Auburn Tigers started shooting around at halftime before the second half, all but one. And it was Jakai Howard who worked his way straight to the bench. You could see frustration from him in that exact moment, and it carried on throughout the length of the second half. There were multiple times to where Auburn got big buckets and the entire bench erupted, but one player did not. And again, you could see the frustration continuing to build on that side of things. And he goes into the game for a couple possessions. He did log 5 minutes of action. A majority of those were in the first half. I believe he played one possession up and down the floor, and Chaz Lanier buried a three in transition, and it was guarded by Jakai Howard, who had a lazy closeout, and Lanier made the three that either tied the game or cut into the lead, where it felt like that three in itself was a 12-0 run by Tennessee. Bruce Pearl calls timeout. You see the altercation there, and then a couple of minutes later, you're looking around the bench, and he's no longer there.
His bright red sneakers were nowhere to be found.
Were they red or pink or
whatever they were?
Very easily spottable, you could say. And so I was at the game. I also did not see that exact moment or the altercation with Bruce Pearl, but I was seeing everything before with the lack of cheering on the team. Then I watched him go to the scorer's table, come in, then they called timeout, and then all of a sudden I was like, oh, we got subbed out immediately, then looked along the bench for the shoes, and they were not there. And so that's when the real concerns raised of what happened. And now that we know that is how everything went down, he was essentially essentially deleted from the roster in that game. He was no longer a part of the game, was no longer a part of the bench, and nothing's really been said or heard since.
And it's unfortunate because we thought we had moved past this, right? There have obviously been other situations, including Jakai Howard this season.
Dismissed from the game was what I was going for,
sure,
rather than something else.
And we've had several situations like this, and there have been multiple moments that have been shared on social media about the attitude, lack of emotion, lack of support from Jakai Howard. And I was talking with girl I was sitting next to in the media row, and her and I were discussing it, and she said, I thought we had kind of gotten past this. And I thought, and I said, yeah, I kind of thought so too. And in the biggest game of the year, in a moment where you would think a freshman could step up and have some serious minutes, he was a non-factor. And now Auburn's dealing with their own sort of situation.
Or instead of necessarily become a factor on the floor, as a freshman, be the leader on the bench. Be the energy guy that keeps your entire team on the bench full of energy, and be the spark plug when you're needed.
Well, other than that, there's a lot of positives to talk about from Auburn's win over Tennessee this weekend. We'll talk about that with Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network, plus other news around Auburn athletics. He joins us coming up next.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Jacob Goins, Christian Griffin with you on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. And we get to the phone lines. We welcome in this guy who joins us every Monday at 3:30. You can hear him a part of the wonderful Auburn Sports Network coverage each and every week between Auburn basketball, Tiger Talk, women's basketball, upcoming baseball and softball seasons as well. Jacob Hillman joins us now. My man, how's it feel to be covering the number one team in the nation again this week?
Man, it's as awesome as you can imagine, and you know, Jacob, obviously you were there Saturday night doing work. I hope you had a great birthday weekend as well.
And, thank you, I did.
Happy to be on as always.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what happened this past Saturday night as Auburn used a off midweek, right? No midweek game a week ago. Seemingly got healthy, got rested. Big question was if Jani Broome was going to play in this game. And as he told us in the postgame presser after his car was vandalized, he said, no way I would miss this game. And not only did he play, Hillman, he had an official double-double, had a Bruce Pearl triple-double, and he was just named the SEC Player of the Week.
Yeah, there's nothing more you can ask for from Jani Broome after being out for a couple of weeks and getting his first action when Coach Pearl said it. I think we only expected to see him about 20 minutes on Saturday night, and he ended up going 33, which is a really impressive performance from Jani Broome, regardless of the statistics he put up, obviously a double-double, leading Auburn to the victory. And that's just something that speaks to Jani's. Really his skill set, but also just how strong-willed he is. And as well as the credit goes to that entire training staff over there and working with Jani to get him back as quickly as possible. Obviously, there were some that thought he might not be back until maybe next Saturday against Ole Miss or that home game against Oklahoma, but he looked fine out there. I think he fatigued a little bit towards the end of the game, but that's nothing that he couldn't overcome, and he's not gonna get better at in the coming week. So that's a good sign from Jani Broome. And obviously, this game was a bit of a rock fight, and you needed every single point and rebound from Jani in that one.
And one thing we've talked a lot about today here on the show, Hillman, is the fact that for 40 minutes of this basketball game, Tennessee controlled it. They played the exact way they wanted to play, especially on the road against a high-flying offense like Auburn. I mean, these two teams average almost 10 points difference offensively going into this game, and yet Auburn still found a way to do it. And so, of course, Jani Broome was a big part of that, Miles Kelly hitting the go-ahead three, but your main takeaways and factors on how Auburn got it done on Saturday?
Yeah, it is that they got it done and not in the way that we've seen before this season. I think this is really the first game that Auburn has won in just this kind of tempo, this low tempo way, and not with putting a ton of points on the board. Obviously, there's been so much made of how great this offense is. You know, number one in so many categories and efficiency measurables and everything that goes into it. But it was the defense that really made a difference in this game, and obviously Tennessee's offense has struggled at times this year, but they've also come through when it matters. Chaz Lanier is obviously a great player for this Tennessee team, and he was held relatively in check for the performances he's put up this season, and that was very important for Auburn. And I just think that this defensive effort was very important, and that comes with several guys that had four fouls. Obviously, Chad Baker Mazzara and Miles Kelly each had four fouls, and it was the big men that did stay out of foul trouble. I think that was the discussion when Jani was unavailable, was, all right, how can Chaney and Dylan and Jaheim Hudson, when he's in the game, stay out of foul trouble? And they did that on Saturday. So I just think it was a really, really all around well played defensive performance against a Tennessee team that was doing what it wanted to as far as the half-court game. And it felt like every possession they took went under 10 seconds in the shot clock. They never took a shot before there were 10 seconds. I'm sure they did, but it didn't feel like that, and Auburn really handled it very well.
Talking with Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. Jacob, the term that I used on Saturday night to describe this team was versatile. You feel like this team has so much versatility, especially when they're playing in games like this. If a team wants to get in a barn burner and try and put up 90, Auburn's going to respond and put up 110. In a game like this, this was the first time that we've seen Auburn play a game like this where it was so defensive fought to where you almost feel like the other team controlled it, like what Jacob was saying a moment ago. How does this speak to this team going forward and how you can find so many different ways to win a basketball game, and you still sit with the number one by your name in the Auburn Tigers?
Well, I look at this. How about this? A lot of the national pundits talked about how Auburn's guards needed to make threes to win this game. That didn't happen. Auburn made three threes all game. One was from Jani Broome in the first half, and the other two were Miles Kelly One on that curl at the top of the key, and then obviously the massive corner three to take the lead for good. And that just shows me that this team, like you said, is as versatile as you can get, whether it's winning on the defensive end or getting the baskets that you need to get when you need to get them. Denver Jones, obviously, I think this is his first game that he went 0-for in his Auburn career. And I think he had the game against Duke, but that game, obviously, Denver struggled a little bit, but Todd Pettiford came in and he only played 14 minutes, but his plus minus just shows how great he made an impact on this game. I think he played the best defense he's played all season long. And then when he came in towards the end of regulation and made that little floater that really felt like it shifted the momentum when Auburn was down 4 and got things going again. And that from that point on, Auburn made a couple stops, Miles hits the 3, and from there Auburn gets the win. So I just feel like, again, it's individuals step up in different games and when they need to. Chaney Johnson, I feel like, obviously, no one really stuffed the stat sheet other than Jani Broom, but Chaney Johnson played a fantastic game as well.
It was obviously a big day on Saturday from start to finish. College Game Day was there for ESPN. You had Junior Day for Auburn football, and then, of course, the game on Saturday night. And I know this is probably a tougher question that people like you and I don't get paid enough to answer, and hopefully they do get it solved. But with the incidents that happened early Saturday morning with ESPN's College Game Day, with a borderline stampede of students that rushed the building to try and get in line just to get a glimpse of College Game Day and, of course, get a glimpse of this Auburn basketball team. I mean, Hillman, has Auburn basketball reached a point where ticketing has to be done a different way in terms of students just because of the demand and the popularity of how big this program has gotten?
Yeah, again, like you said, I think this is something that's been discussed for several years at this point. And there's obviously no light to be made of that situation, but it does show just the passion and how much people want to go see this team. That's obviously besides the point, but I do think that College Game Day and the national spotlight obviously makes it where it is just something that everyone wants to be a part of. And that's something that that is really something that wasn't possible here at Auburn about 10 years ago. And I'll kind of speak on that, where Brad Law on the pregame show on Saturday spoke with Jay Billis, the color analyst, obviously, for ESPN, and mentioned, College Game Day coming to Auburn for the 5th straight season and what that means. And Jay mentioned, at the first time it was good for Auburn. But now it's good for College Game Day whenever they come to Auburn. And that's a huge deal for someone to say that, considering where this program was before Coach Pearl got here. So I just think that's a good way to speak on it. And I think that that obviously the powers that be will work on that, and we'll see something different whenever we have these big games in the future, because those games are coming up this upcoming month.
Bruce Pearl was talking about it in the post game as Auburn sits at 6-0 in conference play, about how they're fortunate because so many of their games, I believe it's 4 of their wins, have come down to the final shot or the final minute of the contest, where you could easily be 2-4 or 3-3. You now look ahead. The road doesn't get any easier for the Auburn Tigers. Back-to-back road games, Wednesday at LSU and Saturday at 23rd-ranked Ole Miss. What is the biggest question mark that you would like to see answered as Auburn hits the road for back-to-back games?
Yeah, I think it's the response from the offense in these next two games. Obviously, the offense didn't perform like you want it to, even though it was against the great Tennessee defense. It's how you go and respond against LSU and at Ole Miss. Obviously, LSU's towards the bottom of the SEC. Ole Miss is having a year where they're playing their best basketball in a while. So I think that they're at a point where they really want to make a statement, and a great statement would be playing the number one team really well or beating them. So I just think that the response matters a lot here. And then you have a home stretch. So you want to go on the road and see what you can do against these teams. And then, like you said, it only gets tougher. I think that when you get down to it, what matters is what happens at the end of the season and how you stand against the SEC, because the SEC this year is as tough of a conference as you're ever going to see, probably in our lifetimes, just because of how great the top-tier programs are. Tennessee is a great basketball team, as is Alabama, as is Florida. Kentucky is as well. Texas A&M is right there on the outside looking in, but they lost to Texas on Saturday. Mississippi State is a great team as well. They went to overtime with South Carolina, and I can go on and on, but I just think that whenever you go on the road here, you've got to get up and play your best game.
Auburn at LSU on Wednesday. That game will begin at 6 p.m. Pregame begins at 5:30 over next door on our sister station, Wings 94.3. Also, Tiger Talk coming up this Thursday. Jacob Hillman, do we know who the guests are? Are we allowed to talk about that yet?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll be at Baumhauer's Victory Grill for a second straight weekend. Coach Pearl will join us, and it'll be talking softball. Chris Malvo will join us, co-head coach, obviously. Kate Malvo, the other co-head coach. But we'll speak it over with Chris. Looking ahead to opening weekend on the Plains, that's coming up February 7th through the 9th.
Dang, man, February 7th through the 9th. That's right. When softball begins. And baseball right around the corner, too. I'm sure you saw that video that Auburn Baseball posted today. Ooh. The seats becoming available. The space is now getting finalized on top of the monster out there.
Man, I cannot wait to be inside Plainsman Park and see everything when it gets completed. I think they're putting the final touches on it as we move into this last week of January. And it's gonna look unbelievable. Like you said, the War Eagle Wall is going to be such a unique experience. And then, obviously, the new premium spaces in down the right field line, as well as the new student seating in right center field. It's expanded a little bit from this past year. It's going to be awesome. And it's going to become one of the best atmospheres in the SEC as well. And that's saying a lot here in the SEC, where it's like an arms race for facilities in SEC baseball.
Crossover season is just a couple of weeks away. Looking forward to having our relationship extend into the spring. We'll have baseball coverage for you on our family radio stations here at the Auburn Network. Also, Auburn Women's Basketball continues their coverage here on ESPN 106.7 for their last few games. It's crazy that season's getting closer to wrapping up as well here on ESPN. Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. He's with us every Monday at 3:30 here during On the Line. Plug it on, my man. Tell people what's coming up and where they can find everything they need.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll tell you what, it almost feels like crossover season already. On Friday, swimming and diving, got a men's and women's W over Alabama, the James E. Martin Aquatic Center. Their postseason's coming up. Gymnastics beats number 9 Oregon State inside Neville Arena. Women's tennis, they take down a good USC and a team to go to indoor ITA kickoff. So everything's going on right now. Women's basketball takes down Florida. Obviously, a tough loss on Thursday, but the fact that they're able to bounce right back and get that big win just shows the resiliency of this team. But like I said, Wednesday at LSU, 6 o'clock Central in Baton Rouge. Auburn Sports Network coverage at 5:30 on Wings 94.3. No midweek for women's basketball. They'll be back at South Carolina's number. I don't know if they're top-ranked anymore. I think UCLA's up there right now, but they'll be at South Carolina on Sunday at 11 a.m. Central, right here on ESPN 106.7. Britt Bowen will have that coverage. And then before that, men's basketball will travel to Ole Miss on Saturday at 1 Central, coverage beginning at 12:30. So, yeah, a lot going on. We'll be at Baumhauer's on Thursday for Tiger Talk with Coach Pearl and Coach Malvo. You can follow all the action at AU Sports Network on Twitter. There's plenty of coaches' interviews and coverage details right there. And you can follow me as well at Jacob Hillman AU.
Jacob, always appreciate your time, my friend. We look forward to this every single week, a perfect way to kick off the week, getting ready for everything going on around the Auburn Sports Network. Have a fantastic week, my friend. We'll have you on again next Monday.
Talk to you then. War Eagle.
That's Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network, again with us every Monday at 3:30 here during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. We'll wrap up the show. Give our final thoughts on the NFC-AFC championship games and everybody's most anticipated Super Bowl matchup. Yay, the Chiefs and Eagles, woohoo! We'll talk about that as we wrap up the show after this.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
winding down here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7 for almost the first day, first show of the new era in the books. Been a good one. We've had all sorts of conversation today. Great calls, great guests, great conversation. So if you missed any of the show today, be sure to go back and listen to it at ESPNAU.com. It'll put out on various podcasting platforms, but as always, the best way to find it is at ESPNAU.com. Be sure you stick around. Stay tuned. Coming up, the drive is at Franklin Tire and Auto. They're on location today. They are about once a month, about one Monday per month. They're over there at Franklin Tire and Auto. Good friends of the station here. So stay tuned. Bill and Dan will be there. I'm going to stop by and check that out or anything. You can listen to that here on ESPN. They'll have you for another 2 hours talking a lot of the same things we did. Auburn basketball, SEC basketball. And I do want us to finish out the show. Dak called in about it earlier. He was fired up. I haven't had a good NFL call like that in quite some time. But he was fired up about the coaching decisions in the games yesterday in the NFC and the AFC championship games. We'll stay away from that a little bit since we did have a good discussion. But the Super Bowl matchup that nobody wanted. It's the Eagles from Philadelphia and the Chiefs of Kansas City, which you do have to show respect because I said to Dak earlier, the Chiefs are going for history. Literally, history. They have a chance to win three in a row, three-peat in the Super Bowl. CG, that's never been done. No team has ever won back-to-back-to-back Super Bowls in the NFL, which shows how hard it is to do and why the NFL is honestly considered one of the toughest leagues in all of professional sports in the world.
I mean, as it should be, it's an unfortunate double-edged sword. Because I picked both favorites to make their way
How bold
to the
you.
Super Bowl. I know. It's like all of the March Madness brackets where they have the one seeds going to the Final Four. Like, oh, it's crazy how you came up with that one, the auto-generated bracket. But, no, I mean, these two teams have been two of the best, if not the two best, of the entire football season. Eagles win it against the Commanders 55-23. They use seven rushing touchdowns on their way to a victory. The Chiefs and the Bills, another classic. Was this the fourth conference championship essentially in the last 5 years, and the new great American tradition of Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills not being able to get over the hump in Kansas City. The Chiefs win that one 32-29. First look, and the first line has come out. They're favoring Kansas City by a point and a half.
I would jump on that.
I was thinking the exact same thing.
I would jump on that. I would be willing to bet America would probably jump on that, even just out of hope, right? Just to bet on the Eagles in hopes that they win.
Out of please.
Well,
please.
Everybody was cheering for the Bills yesterday, and that didn't work, so now everybody's going to wear green and cheer for the Eagles in the Super Bowl.
I saw somebody say something, and it was along the lines of, please, everybody, just for entertainment purposes only, throw everything on the Bills. Throw everything on the Chiefs to where if they win, you win your money back and you win money and you're happy. But you're also very happy if the Bills win as well. So you feel like it was a win-win situation. And
you know, Chiefs, there's a term for that, don't you? It's like betting against your team in any sort
for
of
success,
game.
Yeah.
Yeah. You either win money or your team wins. It's called emotional hedging. That's what that's called.
Understandable.
Makes sense, right?
Very much. I'll throw $5 on the other team for that way my team can continue to win.
For your team to win.
Makes a lot of sense. You're not superstitious, but you're a little stitious.
Just
right?
a little bit. That's right. Just
I did it
bit.
Inside Neville Arena. Shout out to the people that I was standing with that just hit the minute point in the game, and I looked over and we've been talking throughout the entire game, and I sat there and said, please don't call me crazy. Can we switch spots?
Yeah.
And they looked over and they were like, for real? And I was like, yes, please.
Yeah.
Like, don't question it. It's a baseball thing. I'm not superstitious. I'm a little stitious. And it's only crazy if it doesn't work. We switched seats. And then the lady on the other side came up and said, what was that? And I said, asking about a minute and a half. And she walked over after the game and found me and said, I apologize for any sort of questioning. You were right. And so
everything
ended up working. And it was, so shout out to everybody. You're welcome for that one.
Well, there you go. It's the Chiefs and the Eagles in the Super Bowl. We'll talk more about that as we get closer as well. Hey, you got Lee Scott basketball tonight, right?
Lee Scott and Glenwood, the rematch, part two inside Sanford Gymnasium. Heading over there as soon as we get done with this one. 5 o'clock and 7:30, the schedule for that one. Tiger Country 104.5.
There you go. Another rendition, Warriors and Gators. Check it out on the Lee Scott Sports Network. We're back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. For Christian Griffin, I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.